Well, let's move on into chapter 12. We're still, of course, just a continuation here of this speech that Moses is giving. And he begins chapter 12, verse 1. These are the statutes and judgments which ye shall observe to do in the land which the Lord God of thy fathers giveth thee to possess it, all the days that you live upon the earth. Now it seems Moses is beginning to get more specific now about what things they are to do. And the first command he's going to really talk about, although he doesn't name it as a command, but this the context demands that this is the subject is going to be. The first command that he's going to talk about is really the second commandment, the one about idolatry. Let's turn just for a moment and read the second commandment. Thou shalt not make thee any graven image. This is Deuteronomy 5, beginning with verse 8. Thou shalt not make thee any graven image, or any likeness of anything that is heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the waters beneath the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself unto them, nor serve them, for I, the Lord, thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. So this second command has to do with idolatry. You shall not make thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that's heaven above or that is in the earth beneath or that is in the waters beneath the earth. No image, no likeness of anything. Now that was what the command forbid. And you're not to bow down to it, to serve it, or to worship it in any manner. So as Moses now gets more specific, he says, these are the statutes and judgments which ye shall observe to do in the land which the Lord God of thy fathers giveth thee to possess it all the days that you live upon the earth. Now these commands are not just for a short time. They are for all the days that you live upon the earth. And that's always true of God's commands. They are for all our days. There are no times in the life of a human being in which God does not intend that we be subject to His commands all the days of thy life upon the earth. Ye shall utterly destroy all the places wherein the nations which ye shall possess serve their gods upon the high mountains and upon the hills and under every green tree. Now let's remember, as they went into Canaan, these Canaanites, and there were many, many different nationalities, but these Canaanites were all worshiping gods. They were a religious people. They had all manner of organized religion already established. And so the command was, when you go in there, you're to destroy all of these places and all of these objects of worship. Now, where did they worship? Upon the high mountains and upon the hills and under every green tree. They had the choicest places for their worship. The high mountains, the hills. It seemed as though the higher they could get, the better they liked it. And under every green tree. And as you know, they had groves that were specially planted to worship in. And one of the downfalls of Israel was that they did not completely destroy all of these places of worship. They didn't destroy these groves like they should. But God did not want any of these things left. He further says, and ye shall overthrow their altars, and break their pillars, and burn their groves with fire, and ye shall hew down the graven images of their gods, and destroy the names of them out of that place. Now he wanted every vestige of idolatry destroyed. You cut it down, you burn it, you do whatever necessary to get rid of it. Don't even leave the names of it. We don't even want any remembrance made of these things. These names that were so prominent in this land, we want it completely wiped out. So that there'll be no way that people can say that this land was ever inhabited by idolatrous gods. Now, this did several things. Not only did it abolish that idolatry and that form of worship, but it also would be a safeguard to prevent God's people from using those things as a worship to God. Everything to do with the idolatry was an abomination to God, and he wanted no part of it. Not only did he not want it used for his worship, he wanted no part of it even left. And the fourth verse says, ye shall not do so unto the Lord your God. These were not to be used to the Lord their God. The people did not completely carry this command out. They left these groves. And they left the remnants of some of these idolatrous things. And Isaiah plainly describes how they had their own private secret gods and brought them into their house and so on. And you see what happens when they leave these relics and these places, these altars or whatever that they might leave. Then the natural human tendency is to say, that's such a nice place. Let's just go there and worship our God there. We can bring the things of the true God and put them right in there and use those facilities. They're so nice. They're so good. We can just use them and worship our God. It'd make it so neat and so comfortable. But God would have none of that. And so we see then today that any time a person worships God, and does not use the things specified by God, then he's borrowing them from some other source, and it's an abomination to God. You cannot take a chance on just using something and hoping that it's all right with God unless you can show that this is something that God would approve of. Now, there was all kinds of religion there in that land before the Israelites got there. Very religious place. He describes all of these places in details. They had names. They had graven images of their gods. They had the groves, and they had the pillars, and they had the altars, and they had the places on the high mountains and the hills and under evergreen tree. Just on and on. Much effort had been put into their worship, into their religion. But God wanted it all destroyed. He demands that all of it be destroyed, and he says, "Ye shall not do so unto the Lord your God." So nothing was left to chance now as to, is this all right or is that all right? Nothing was left to chance. God specified what he wanted. So in verse 5 he says, "But unto the place which the Lord your God shall choose out of all your tribes to put his name there, even unto his habitation shall ye seek, and thither shall thou come." Now the Lord would choose the place. He said, "I'm going to choose the place out of all the tribes." He didn't leave it up to them to decide, because there might be friction between this tribe or that tribe as to where this place was going to be. But he would choose a place among all the tribes where the worship was going to be. And he said he'd put his name there. "Even under his habitation shall ye seek, and thither shall thou come." This would be a place that would be known as the habitation of God, where God dwelt. And of course we know that was the Ark of the Covenant that we talked about here a few studies ago. It was the Ark of the Covenant. That was where God dwelt, at the mercy seat. That was where the blood was brought by the high priest. And so wherever that was, and it was located in the most holy place of the tabernacle, wherever that was the habitation of God. That's where his name was, and that's where they were to come for certain parts of their worship to God. "And thither shall ye bring your burnt offerings, and your sacrifices, and your tithes, and heave offerings of your hand, and your vows, and your freewill offerings, and the firstlings of your herds and of your flocks. And there shall ye eat before the Lord your God, and ye shall rejoice in all that you put your hand unto, ye and your households, therein the Lord thy God hath blessed thee." Or wherein the Lord thy God hath blessed thee. So now there's a lot said here. Many of their items of worship, and he names them all there in verses 5 and 6 practically, verses 6 and 7. "Burnt offerings, sacrifices and tithes, heave offerings of your hand, your vows, your freewill offerings, the firstling of your herds and your flocks, and there shall you eat before the Lord your God." The things they were to eat and worship to God that they had sacrificed was to be eaten there. "And you shall rejoice in all that you put your hand unto, ye and your households, wherein the Lord thy God hath blessed thee." Now intermingle with this specification, he puts the stipulation that they are to rejoice. And he says, "Rejoice in all that you put your hand unto." In all of their endeavors, they were to take upon them an attitude of joy. All that you put your hand to. In other words, their whole life, their whole existence was spent in service to God, and this was supposed to be something that they were happy and pleased to be doing. They would rejoice in all that they put their hand to. wherein the Lord thy God hath blessed thee. You shall not do after all the things that we do here this day. Now, when they get into Canaan, they were not going to do like they did in the wilderness. There's going to be some changes made. He said, you shall not do after all the things we do here this day. Every man whatsoever is right in his own eyes. There didn't seem to be very many ways to check on them and to keep them under control out there in the wilderness. Every man did what he thought was right in his own eyes. That's not going to be the way it is in Canaan. You'll not do that way in Canaan. You're going to do differently in Canaan. We're going to have a strict control on what's done and how it's done. For ye are not as yet come to the rest and to the inheritance which the Lord your God giveth you. This had not come into effect yet. God didn't tell them where this place was going to be, that he would put the altar or the tabernacle or his habitation. Moses wasn't privileged to give them that information. That would be decided as they went along. But when you go over Jordan and dwell in the land which the Lord your God giveth you to inherit, and when he giveth you rest from all your enemies round about, so that you dwell in safety, then there shall be a place. Now, you don't have it here in the wilderness. But when you go over Jordan and you've been successful and God's given you this place where you can now rest, then there will be a place, or shall be a place, which the Lord your God shall choose to cause his name to dwell there. Neither shall you bring all that I command you, thither thou shalt bring all that I command you, your burnt offerings and your sacrifices, your tithes, and the heave offering of your hand, and all the choice vows which you vow unto the Lord. So we see then that he would tell them where the place would be after they got over into Canaan. And then all these items of worship had to be brought there. You couldn't do it just anywhere. Couldn't do it just any way. Had to be brought there. So you see, we have double safeguards. All of the idolatrous altars and groves and images are to be completely destroyed. And yet, if you worship the true God, you can only worship where he wants you to worship. Can't do it just any place you want to. So a double safeguard to keep them out of idolatry. Now, in 2 Chronicles 7 and 12, we read about the altar eventually going to be at the temple there at Jerusalem. So that's where God eventually had it to be. But it started off, this ark was first placed at Shiloh. And whenever things became so corrupt at Shiloh, it was moved to another place called Kirjath-Jearim. And then it left there and was taken to other places, many other places. And finally then the place for it was Jerusalem. And there was a temple built at Jerusalem for it to have a permanent dwelling place. Now, as we stop and think about this, God wanted his whole nation, he wanted all of the people in his nation, to worship at one place. And there were certain items they could not do anywhere else but that one place. If you didn't get to Jerusalem to do it, you just didn't get to do it because it was not to be done other places. Now, we find in the Christian age that it doesn't work that way. There are some who would say, well, yes, God wants us to all have one central place today, one headquarters, and that headquarters is Rome. That's the main primary mother church, and we all look to Rome. But the Bible does not teach that at all. The Bible teaches that there was going to be a change made in this plan during the Christian age. I'd like to read, first of all, from Malachi. Malachi 1, verse 11, where he talks about the Gentiles. For from the rising of the sun, even unto the going down of the same, my name shall be great among the Gentiles. And in every place incense shall be offered unto my name, and a pure offering, for my name shall be great among the heathen, saith the Lord of hosts. So here he gives a prophecy that in every place incense will be offered. So it wouldn't just be one place. When his name became great among the Gentiles. That's a prophecy from Malachi. Now, again, let's go back to John 4 and look there again at what Jesus said to this woman at the well. She said, our fathers worshipped in this mountain, verse 20, and ye say that in Jerusalem is the place for men ought to worship. Jesus saith unto her, woman, believe me, the hour cometh when ye shall neither in this mountain nor yet at Jerusalem worship the Father. Now there's a time coming, Jesus says, when neither one of these places will be the place to worship the Father. It wasn't going to be limited to Jerusalem. Neither this mountain nor Jerusalem, he says. Ye worship ye know not what. We worship what we know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews, but the hour cometh, and now is, when the true worshipers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for the Father seeketh such to worship him. God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. Now I believe that one of the things that Jesus is teaching there is that there's coming a time when Jerusalem would no longer be the center. That mountain, Zion, would no longer be the center of the worship of God's people. The literal Mount Zion, not the spiritual Mount Zion. And so we see then that this rule wouldn't always apply to God's people about having to go to this one place where the Ark of the Covenant was to do the worship. Again, we have evidence of that in 1 Peter 2 and 5, where Peter is talking about a similar thing. He says, ye also as lively stones are built up a spiritual house and holy priesthood to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God by Jesus Christ. Now we're lively stones today. You're lively stones, he says. Built up a spiritual house, a holy priesthood to offer spiritual sacrifices. So that we then, the church, are now constitute the place where these sacrifices can be acceptably offered to God. But during the time of the law, the nation was limited to this one place, wherever it was that God had his habitation. That was the place that they did these certain things of worship. So we proceed now with verse 12. And ye shall rejoice before the Lord your God, ye and your sons and your daughters, and your men servants and your maid servants, and the Levite that is within your gates, for as much as he hath no part nor inheritance with you. Now here again he talks about this rejoicing. Ye shall rejoice before the Lord your God, and the Levite that is within your gates. He includes the Levite. Now remember, the Levite did not have any inheritance with them. He had no territory that was his. He wasn't given a part of the land. And so the rest of the Israelites then were commanded to allow the Levite to enjoy their inheritance with them. The Levite that's within thy gate. He mentioned this several times. Take heed to thyself that thou offer not thy burnt offerings in every place that thou seest. And see here again, he says it in another way. Do not offer in every place that thou seest. You don't have that choice. You don't have that privilege. You can't just go anywhere and offer these burnt offerings. You cannot do that. Not just any place. Not in every place that thou seest. But in the place which the Lord shall choose, in one of thy tribes, there thou shalt offer thy burnt offerings, and there thou shalt do all that I command thee. So he says it again in another way. You cannot offer just any way that you want to, or any place you want to. In the place that I choose, there's where you can do it. Notwithstanding, thou mayest kill and eat flesh in all thy gates, whatsoever thy soul lustest after, according to the blessing of the Lord thy God, which he hath given thee. The unclean and the clean may eat thereof, as of the roebuck, and as of the hart. Now it seems that while they were in the wilderness, they did not have the privilege to eat these things that they could sacrifice in their houses. They had to, when they ate of these things, they had to offer part of them in the tabernacle. Now he is changing that so that they could eat these things in their homes. They could eat the flesh, kill and eat the flesh in all thy gates, whatsoever thy soul lusteth after, according to the blessing of the Lord thy God, which he hath given thee. So he's broadening that somewhat so that they can't eat these things at home. He further says, the clean and the unclean may eat thereof. Now, there were many instances in which a person could be counted as unclean. We won't try to name all of them, but for example, when a woman had given birth to a child, if it was a male child, she was unclean for 40 days. If it was a female child, she was unclean for 80 days. If you touched any dead body, you were counted as unclean. If you sat on the bed of a man who had died, you were unclean. If you had an issue from a part of your body, that was unclean. If a woman had an issue, it was unclean. Many things would make a person unclean. Certain diseases, like leprosy. But here, when he talks about eating these things in your houses, the clean and the unclean could both eat of these things. So he specifies that. Then in verse 16 he says, "Only you shall not eat the blood. You shall pour it upon the earth as water." Now, in the tabernacle, when they sacrificed these things before they ate them, they poured the blood on the altar. They used it in sacrifice. So when he gave them permission to eat these same things in their homes, the blood still was something they could not eat. He says, pour it on the ground, on the earth, as water. Just pour it out. Do not eat the blood. Another place in this chapter he says, because that's the life. Now, some of the Bible scholars have pointed out that the worshipers of idolatry also had a very special significance of blood.